I love it when people say you can't do that, because I always do. And people say you need a PA. My PA couldn't cope with how my brain works. So I go to bed late, I get up early, and then I smash it. Be happy with who you are. Get up in the morning and just have that focus. You're going to have your setbacks. You're going to have the days when you get up and don't want to do it. But they're most of the days that you've got to force yourself to that next step.
It's amazing how the 25 years it's took. You're finally going to launch your website.
Yeah.
But you're probably going to be one of the very few that has a website full of content that's authentic.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be such a powerful day when all that's revealed.
Well, I think the important thing for me with the website, when we started Try for Life, it was never about the media or the likes or the socials. It was about just doing it with people and achieving things. And then we got to a point where people said, you should be a charity. I said, well, it was never intended to be a charity. And what we do is not a charity. You know, we help charities. And it gives us that flexibility to be who we are and what we are. And I kind of still maintain that. But what I'm finding now is I've got grandkids who'll get bored of me telling all these stories. And I thought the website would just be a great archive for all the stories that won't be here when I'm gone. And it'd be great just for that next generation to have access to it. Because there's tons and tons of stuff not on that website that we can hopefully build on and, you know, build the archive of all the footage and the films and all the memories. And then they can choose to either carry it on or not. But at least it's there then, isn't it?
Well, every time I've been on the mountain with you, there's been endless stories that would sort of leave people in amazement of what actually has gone on. And the great thing is it's not the story of one person, it's the story of like a collective of people that all help each other over the line.
I think what I love as well is that so when we get together as a team, I'm happy having a beer or a coffee, and we were talking about certain events. So say we're talking about riding across America, and guys, we're having a conversation that I've never heard of stuff that happened that I was part of, but never shared. It's just incredible that just that sharing of experience.
Do you know when your grandkids or somebody close to you says, "What's the biggest challenge you've ever faced?"
Yeah.
Do you come back to one of the, or is there so many stories within that?
I think challenges are, you measure them by your capability of dealing with them, don't you? And the only way you deal with them is by learning. And, you know, life has got a funny way of throwing things at you, where sometimes you just got to react. But it all stays in the bank, don't it? You know, and then you can pick up on that experience.
I remember when you said to me you were 20 minutes from the top of Everest?
Yeah.
And unknowingly, you were hallucinating because you ran out of oxygen.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's a challenge that you didn't realize. Layered on top of that, there's something else going on that you weren't aware of.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know, but again, you just, you know, you call on your experience to get through it. And I think in that moment, I was just focused on getting to the top. I had been for about the last 3 hours, I think, but...
So what have you brought back, or vice versa? Has starting your first business and all the challenges going with it helped you cycle across America, climb Everest, or vice versa? What has all these Ironmen and climbing the top tallest mountains helped you when you come back to business?
There's no demarcation in it. And you know, when I walked into that business 30 years ago, 1996. You know, that was just a little terraced house that we converted into a paint shop. But just to have that vision of what could be possible and just to keep working away. And then just over the years, just facing them challenges, taking the learnings, making mistakes, and putting yourself out there every day.
But did you know it was possible?
No.
When you went from your first business, or whenever you started your training that many years ago?
No. You just do what you think's right. Sometimes it goes well, sometimes it doesn't, but just keeping that positivity and that resilience to keep moving forward.
And is there ever a time that you thought, fucking hell, I've really gone too far here, I'm never going to get over this hurdle, or I'm never going to...
Lots of times, people ask me about Everest. So, you know, everybody wants to talk about Everest and climbing Everest. And I say, you know, I've had tougher days on a dark winter's night, stuck in my office, trying to solve issues no one wants to talk about. Mm-hmm. They're the bigger challenges in life. Climbing a mountain is just one foot in front of the other, isn't it? You know, and eventually you get there. I suppose business is a bit the same. You know, you hit those tough times. You just got to keep taking the steps to get there.
It seems to be that you relish... Whenever I've been on the mountain with you, there's been storms, there's been... Well, even when we went to Nepal together.
Yeah.
No matter how cold or how wet it is, the amount of times you've turned around to me and gone, oh, it's great, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's as if... The more tougher it is, the wetter it is, the colder it is.
Yeah, yeah.
Remember we washed ourselves in that water that came down from the
it was cold,
glacier.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was freezing, and you're like, whoa, this is great.
Life affirming.
So whenever you're saying that, is it you've taught yourself to be so comfortable with being uncomfortable, or that you actually have tricked yourself into thinking these things are great, or do you know that it will be great looking back?
I just think... You're so fortunate to be able to experience them things and to be in that environment that you can't explain to anybody, you know, and you know, you've been there with us, you've seen the views, the breathtaking.
Are we done with the office or Everest?
Yeah, both, yeah. And then just to look at your own insignificance in the greater scheme of things. You know, people bounce around with egos and, you know, all the material possessions of success, and yet you get into that environment and you realise it counts for nothing because nature is just so much bigger. And I think by exposing yourself to that and accepting that, it gives you the strength to come back and deal with the real world that we create.
People talk about habit stacking as well. Have you found that for you to continue, because it's a challenge. I've never spoke to you ever that there's not another challenge coming up, and how do you manage to keep on with the challenges, balance your family life, balance his business life, and then go with these immense challenges? Is it through stacking habits? Is it...
I think one feeds the other, you know. And I think with where I was born and grew up, and those family values from a young age, from, you know, things you won't even remember because you're that young, just stick with you and they carry you through. And then to see the impact it has on other people, you know, I love just bringing everybody along on that journey and just having that shared experience. You know, people talk about when we cycled across America, that was inspired by Cracknell. So when Cracknell did his solo Ram ride across America, and he ended up with a bit of a state because he got run over with a head injury, and it was really quite an impact watching the film. And then I thought, how great would that be to do it with all your family and your friends and your kids? And we took 51 people across the states, and I thought, you know, Cracknell can come back and share his memories and his... But it's one person.
Mm.
Yeah, we've got 51 stories and 51 memories. And that was 2012. And so the kids who were on that, they were like 10, 11 years old now, all mid-20s, absolutely smashing life. And they always talk about the impact of that trip, the way we did it, how we did it, the places we stayed, the cities we were in, the people that we met. And for me, that's education. You know, I think, you know, going to a whole other agenda around some of the youth culture problems and the social problems that we've got in this country, which could be solved very easily by just getting people out and moving and talking.
Your social skills, your connection, even seeing the world.
It's such an education.
You've got one of the best membership policies that I've ever come across. Yeah. First time I met you and Kieran, I heard about your story, and I said to you, how do I join? Yeah. And you said, you're in.
That's right.
Yeah. I was like, where's the disclaimer?
Yeah.
Where do we actually sign the form? No, you're in.
Yeah.
When do I start? Well, we're going walking this weekend. Yeah, do you fancy going to the Lake District?
There is just there's no red tape. There's no bureaucracy. There's no risk assessments. There's no insurance policies. And I love the fact that that's what we carry with Try for Life. We manage our own risk. We manage our own decisions, and we look after each other.
It's like the way life was, wasn't it? The way I remember growing up.
Yeah.
I've just come back from the farm, and I spent years trying to get away from the farm, thinking this is a hellhole, there's no money here, miserable, who wants to live off the land? And it's so real now to be able to go back there. Thankful I can go back with a few quid in my pocket.
Yeah, yeah.
But it just, as I said, humbles you to actually realise that these are the real values. Yeah. I've been doing a timeline recently, as I know you have for Try for Life. I'm trying to do a timeline of what success is and pivotal points in my life. And I've gone through my photo album, and all my pivotal points are being with my mum, being with my dad, being with my friends, being on the mountains with you guys. And it just shows that it's that just the genuine, authentic, social side of life where it doesn't matter what your background is, you're there to
part,
do something.
Part of it, you know.
As a team.
Yeah, magical.
So what's your next challenge?
So we've got a few things coming up. So obviously got the whole calendar kicking off, which is at the boxing. So we're 10 years into the Maxi Roy Memorial Tournament. So that's great engagement with those youngsters from Leeso. You know, part of the world I'm passionate about, grew up with boxing. You know, probably my earliest mentors and role models were in an amateur boxing gym.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't realise that when you're a kid. It's as you grow older, you realise the value of that. And those, you know, those guys who were looking after me as a 10, 11-year-old, you know, they're all still part of my life. They're still part of Try for Life. And the whole friendship thing just carries on.
Is the Try for Life calendar full now? Because of the amount of repeat occasions.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I get criticised for that. People say, you know, why don't you just do a one-off? And I said, well, if you don't a one-off, you've gone through the hassle of planning it, preparing it.
And everybody can turn up.
And everyone can turn up. And if you're doing it for a good cause and it brings together that community, then why not do it every year? And that's what we've done for 25 years. So, you know, some of these events are just really embedded in what Try for Life is. And then we always add in the bigger challenges and the other challenges. You know, the mountains was a recent one from 2022. Although we started training for that in 2018, you know, it's, you know, we talk about climbing Everest, people think you can just turn up and get to the top, but it's a long preparation. As you know, you've been part of that. And that's a bit nobody sees, those weeks and months of just putting yourself through it so that when you get to that bit where you achieve, it looks like you just turned up and done it. But Try for Life is very much like that, you know, it's very supportive. No matter what your ability is, you're made welcome. And the aim is just to nurture and develop and to develop confidence. So, and it's just been amazing, the events over the years, the amount of people that have turned up on day one with little or no ability, but seeing what others are achieving and just keep turning up and getting involved and pushing yourself. And then you see that confidence come and then you see the achievements. And that achievement just doesn't stay in the event. It reaches everywhere, you know, in your business, in your family. Because for me, if it's done for the right reasons, with the right intentions, then it'll bring the right outcomes.
So is the values that is instilled in Try for Life the same values in your business?
Exactly, yeah. And that's why there's no people say to me, how can you do so much? Well, there's no demarcation in what I do. Everything is linked and integrated, and if I'm doing for one thing, I'm doing it for another. If one part's doing well, then it's all doing well.
Do you find that? So if you're, is there like a congruency with your business going well, your training going well, Try for Life doing well? Is there like an energy that flows between them all?
Definitely an energy. I mean, everything has got a, you know, it's a roller coaster, as you know, being in business. There's no certainties, there's no guarantees. You just got to learn to adapt, be agile and flexible in what you're doing. And that's the same around all the challenges we do. You know, you go in with a plan, and then plan goes wrong, it's how you react. So it's, just overcome and get back on track.
And how do you manage your time? You actually got a strict diary you stick to? I know in business, it's incredibly difficult to say you're going to be there, especially if you're in a creative role,
what
a sort of a managerial role that you're in and I'm in. You need to nearly be there for almost everyone or a major group of people.
I think doing what we do, you never switch off. Although you need to take time, you need to plan time to switch off. But you never actually switched off, because while you're in that zone, there's stuff happening in your brain.
Yeah.
Which, when you back into it, it just becomes more clear. And I think it's the ability of managing your time, but what you do and how you do with it. So whether you need to be face to face, whether you need to be traveling, whether you can do something in a voice call or on a message, whether it can be a group call or a group chat. So it's just deciding how important and how relevant it is in that moment to get that information out. I've looked at my diary and I've looked at my time management, and people say you need a PA. A PA couldn't cope with how my brain works, because it's so flexible and interchangeable that if I had to plan it wouldn't work.
I've started to learn that recently, that although I think I'm being clear on something, a half an hour later I'll come back and change my mind.
Yeah.
And the only sort of excuse or saying I've got that I repeat is that only a fool doesn't change his mind.
Yeah.
Sometimes I change my mind so many times in a day it would confuse anyone.
Yeah. But people say, how do you do it? And I think it's just like, it just exists like a big map in my head. And somehow it just got a way of connecting and working out. I'm criticised for sharing a lack of information, because sometimes things happen that quick in my head that I think I've told people, or I think I've done something. Although it gets done, people say, oh, you never said.
Mm.
I say, I'm sorry, I thought I did, but this is happening anyway.
Do you find the people go along with it because they respect you, because they know you're doing it for the right reasons, or does it cause friction more than it is appreciated that the problem's solved?
Depends who you're involved with. I like to work with autonomous type of thinkers and doers. I think it gets more complicated when you're dealing with committees and people who want to talk about stuff. I'm more of a, give me the information, let me just get on and do it, rather than analysing, critiquing and reviewing.
And have you surrounded yourself with those people then, so you know that they're going to...
The people that can do it,
do how you do it.
Yeah, yeah. But no, it's very, very simple what we do. As I say, I think what holds a lot of people back is the red tape and bureaucracy, and then being afraid to make a decision. I think you make your decision and you learn by it. And if you get it wrong, then you learn not to make that wrong decision again, hopefully.
I don't swim, but I do a lot of walking.
Yeah.
And when I'm in the mountains, my walking turns to thinking, turns to making notes,
yeah.
turns to making phone calls.
Yeah.
And sometimes after a day in the mountains,
yeah.
I've actually solved a lot of problems.
Yeah.
But you do a lot of swimming.
Mm-hmm.
So the opposite happens there, because you can't take your phone.
But you can think.
So,
I think with the long swims, and I think swim fitness is a funny one, because you need to go through the kind of technical learning curve of being able to swim and then get into the rhythm with your breathing. But once you've done that, and you, so I think for me, the first 10 minutes of any swim is horrible, because you've got to get in, got that acclimatizing to the water temperature and the cold, especially this time of year. Then you've got to focus.
So you do a lot of sea swimming instead of pool swimming.
Yeah, so open water. But then adapting your breathing. But then once you become settled with that, you have to go through this kind of barrier after about 10 minutes. And then your body settles, your breathing settles. And then you just get into this nice flow where everything just seems to be moving at a pace, your breathing, your physical movements. And for me, when I'm swimming, it's the sound of the sea. It's when the waters and the waves are hitting you. And then when your head goes underwater, you've got this period of silence, which is just like really serene. And then it's broken again when you breathe.
Mm.
But at the same time, when you're breathing, you're looking up and you're getting this amazing view of whatever landscape is around, the lake or the sea, which you don't get from any other perspective.
Mm.
Yeah. And then you focus in on your breathing and your flow, and it just becomes like a spiritual experience. And then after the time, all these things that you're thinking about, you know, these problems you might have in the office, problems you might have in other parts of your life, just start to assimilate in your mind. And then as you're breathing and swimming, and then somehow you get out the next day, you've got the answer. I can't explain that.
Do you meditate?
That's probably a form of meditation. Yeah. I'm not one for sitting still, not one for... I'm not one for pure meditation, but a family meditation and stuff like that.
I'm going to have to try swimming now, aren't I?
Come and have a go, yeah.
I'm meeting one of your relatives next week. He's a young lad that seems to have got promise.
Aaron.
These discussions, when I'm like, I just love
the
mentorship side of what I do. And it just makes me look back at what I was like at a younger person, trying to come through in business, as you say, probably not knowing where it's all going to go.
Yeah.
Do you spend more time mentoring people on more like life skills, or do people come back to you and ask you a lot about business? Because people, I imagine, look to you as like a life coach, a guru, how to stay motivated, how to be strong, how to be fit, how to be healthy.
Yeah. I think I look at the... So a conversation, I wouldn't say I was a mentor or anything like that.
Well, you are.
But I just...
By default.
Yeah, just listen to what the issues are. And sometimes what they're telling you isn't the issue. Yeah, and then it's about giving them an answer that they can adapt to. Often means them changing something about the behaviour or the routine. But something they can stick with and work towards, so that they will experience the benefits and the outcome. And it's kind of their choice and their decision. I find that a lot with a lot of the young people I deal with, family members. You know, it's just giving them the tools to be able to deal with it. And sometimes it's hard because you know what they're going through. And you know that they won't have the answers now,
mm-hmm.
because they haven't grown through that.
The ability to not judge people is something that I'm extremely proud of getting better at.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's a part of maturing and getting older, but it comes across to me that you're extremely advanced at not judging people. We've had conversations many times, and I've asked you the question about somebody, and you smile, and I'm thinking, you could have easily gave me an answer of frustration, but you've actually smiled and said something really positive, like they're part of our life, they're part of our team, you couldn't live without them.
Yeah, yeah.
Where the same answer from possibly somebody else would be, they're doing me fucking head in here.
Yeah.
So you come across incredible, well, you are incredibly supportive, non-judgmental. And I remember that from the early days with you. And it's something that I've really practiced hard. Because when I sit and I could spend an hour guiding and mentoring somebody and I'll sound like the most clever man in the room.
Yeah.
But then internally I realize I'm not doing half of this shit.
Yeah.
So I know it.
Yeah.
And I'm still not acting on it.
It's all practicing, isn't it? And I think that's the skill of
practice what you preach.
Of being a mentor it's a huge responsibility, you know, when you're guiding young people. It's because they do listen, they do look up to you. So you've got to be very measured in what you say. But also do it in a building way. And I just love everybody. And problem I've had in my life is that I think everything's a great idea. Yeah. And people want to talk about stuff about why it isn't great. But the fact that someone's come up with it, I think, what a great idea.
You know what? Yeah. That's the restaurant across the road that we've had dinner in last year. I was sitting last week and so I've been eating in that restaurant for 20 years and the guy pitched me an idea the other night.
Yeah.
And my answer is yes.
Yeah.
And I said to him, that almost every meeting and every idea that I've been pitched to for 20 years is yes.
Yeah.
Because every idea works.
Yeah.
It's the implementation of that idea.
Yeah.
And if the person is willing to see it through
for
a decade or however long it takes.
Yeah.
There's a great, you know, the great story that everybody knows about is Netflix. Well, they don't know if they know about the story, but Netflix is an incredible story of something that was absolutely so bonkers.
Yeah.
It didn't work.
Yeah.
It didn't work with cassette players.
Yeah.
So the idea didn't work. And then all of a sudden, 6 months later, it worked because DVDs come out.
Yeah.
And then DVDs were able to be posted.
Yeah.
And I often relate to that story because I think that every single idea works.
Yeah.
You just have to figure out the
concept
idea.
Behind it.
And then have your values. Make sure that you're in for the long haul. Nearly, you're in forever.
Yeah. And that's the try for life. There's a saying, try for life, in for life. And even though you might not turn up,
I can vouch for that.
Yeah, even though you don't turn up for a few years, or life takes you on a tangent. You know, as you said before, there's no membership. You know, lots of people phone me up, said, "I heard about Try for Life and I want to be part of it."
Mm.
I say, "Great, you're part of it." And they go, "Well, what do we do? Just be part of it." When you're not part of it, you're not part of it.
Look, we all judge to some degree. And as I just said before, I judge less now. But I remember Steve, the first walk I went on with Try for Life. Steve's in his 60s, anyone that doesn't know. Ended up conquering Everest with you.
Yeah.
So I'm walking with Steve. And this man's in his 60s, and I'm thinking, well, I'm in my 30s, and I can't keep up with him. So we get to over the hill, and eventually I've caught up with him. And at that moment, I'm thinking, older guy, you know, out for a walk.
Yeah.
So I says to him, "Have you done much walking?"
Yeah.
And then he rhymes off. Yeah, he's been on Mont Blanc, and he's been in Nepal. And I just thought, by the end of that day, I'm surrounded by a group of people that I've achieved more in what you could ever believe can be achieved, and they're right under your nose.
And that's the beauty of Try for Life as well. You know, there's a saying that you become what you surround yourself with.
Mm.
And because I spend so much time around Try for Life and all the people and the personalities, that sometimes when you find yourself in a situation there isn't Try for Life, it doesn't take you long to work out how fortunate we are and how blessed we are to have all that around us, you know, and accessible.
So are you the chief organiser still? Are you planning on being able to delegate these roles in the future? Because
I think if you look at the...
Your WhatsApp
and
text messages must be exploding daily with all the events that's going on.
Yeah, it's a lot of legwork, but I've learned over the years to get it done. So, you know, just like clockwork, I kind of know the things I've got to have in place, get it done. Any blockages, deal with them. Any advice or external stuff, try to keep that to a minimum because it complicates stuff. But, yeah, but if you look at the way Try for Life has evolved, you know, with other organisations, you know, you look at certainly the Cross Mersey Swim, you look at the Rusnan events now, you look at the Paul Lavelle Foundation, it's all variations on a theme and all very linked to that ethos of Try for Life.
So what habits can you give the audience about, if they were to, they're sitting on the sofa now, mm-hmm. thinking, how can I be like Liam Hanlon, or how can I even get my life back in order? What habits or what advice could you give them to say,
I think
this is the way forward?
The first thing I'd say is just be yourself. You're not going to be like me and I'm not going to be like you. So be happy with who you are. Get up in the morning and just have that focus to want to achieve. Yeah, and you're going to have your setbacks. You're going to have the days when you get up and don't want to do it. But they're most of the days that you've got to force yourself to that next step. And once you reach that next step, then that confidence will come, the belief will come, and then you'll be able to overcome the barriers and hopefully get to where you want to be.
Do you wake up naturally?
What do you mean?
Like, in the morning, my alarm clock wakes me up every single time.
Yeah.
I could sleep. If my alarm didn't go off, I don't know what time I'd wake up.
Yeah.
I'm like a late owl. I like to stay up late.
Yeah.
A night owl, that's what they say. Yeah. But I like to stay up late. And I hate get up in the morning.
Yeah.
And somehow that habit of getting up in the morning, I've just got used to it being uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But I still don't like it.
Yeah.
And I naturally will fall back into my routine of getting up at 9 or 10 o'clock if I go on holiday.
Yeah.
But do you wake up like reasonably easy in the morning?
Yeah, I mean,
or do you go to bed early at night?
No, not a great sleeper. So I go to bed late, so I get up early, and then I smash it. And then sometimes I just crash, yeah. You know, probably average, go to bed about midnight, and then I'll be up at 6:15.
So do you get a good 6 hours?
Most nights, yeah.
And do you wake up in the middle of the night? Because the amount of reading and research that's being done now about people that get a really good night's sleep seem to perform at their optimum. So I can only think, if you're not at your optimum, well, what would your optimum be?
Yeah.
Is that just you?
Don't know, yeah. It's just that discipline. And I suppose as well that, you know, I'm 57 now. I think getting older and you realise that certainly the physical side of your body starting to feel the pace, your mental agility starts to feel the pace, and I think it's that connection to that routine. So because I've always been up early and always out early and always doing stuff, it's kind of hanging on to that for as long as you can.
But do you actually feel it, or is it because you know you're 57 that do you think I must be feeling it, or is it aches and pains?
I definitely feel it. And if you see me performance stats, you'd know as well. So, but to me, it's not anymore about that top performance. It's about that kind of managing.
Turning up.
Managing your health, managing your body, and being a part of it and enjoying the experience rather than just looking at the outcome and is it my PB. I never wear a heart rate monitor. I never wear a thing for counting my steps. I never measure anything other than how it makes me feel.
Heart rate monitor, I'm sure that it would give you some absolutely mad reads if you were to read one.
Yeah. But I know some people live their life by stats, by Strava, by how many steps they've done. And for me, they're kind of missing, you know, is the goal to enjoy the walk, or is the goal to do 10,000 steps?
Yeah.
You know, and I think the benefits are, there's benefits in both.
I found it useful. I wore a Whoop for a year, which is the big one now. And I found it useful. I recorded some of the things I should improve on.
Yeah.
It really helped me with actually the pattern of sleep, which I knew was quite good. I knew that my zone 2 cardio was low. And after the year, I wrote, I think it was 4 or 5 rules Yeah, I said, just stick to them.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't need the stats. Stats have told me. Yeah, so now I'll just use the stats in my everyday life.
Yeah, yeah.
But very, very, very useful.
Well, I think what I learned as a young boy, so from 10 in the boxing gym, and I boxed till I was 30. So I had 20 years around a really tough sport.
Mm.
That taught me lots about resilience, about determination and confidence. And through all that kind of adolescent stuff that people go through, having boxing to support me through that was magical. Then into the forces with the Royal Marines, going through that process. And I didn't realise at the time, but as you get to these more mature years, just how much that benefits you in terms of understanding yourself, understanding what you're capable of, what your body's capable of, knowing your limits when you're obviously pushing them to where that limit could be, and then on what you can achieve.
Is it harder to receive a nasty email on a Friday afternoon or to get punched in the face in the ring?
Well, they both hurt, don't they? So I'm more used to the latter at the moment with the keyboard warriors and all that. You know, that's another story. But I think now it's just about, with all that experience, you can kind of relax in the comfort and the knowledge of that you can deal with stuff.
That you're doing the right thing.
Yeah, and for the right reasons. You know,
that's helped me. I've realised that, not about taking credit, but I've realised that what I'm doing on that day must be the right thing.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't seem to be the right thing,
yeah,
just don't beat myself up about it.
Yeah, yeah.
Just accept that I'm doing my best.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I can't come out of an hour of guiding or mentoring the next entrepreneur and let them know it's okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is a process and enjoy the journey.
Yeah.
If I shake their hand, say cheers, and then go back in and beat myself up because I haven't enjoyed the journey that day.
Yeah, yeah.
So the guiding, helping people equally and oppositely has balanced my seesaw.
Yeah.
I'm just trying not to bend the seesaw with having too much.
Yeah, yeah. But some days it's like that, you know, and I feel, you know, certainly times it's like that Evan Almighty. You seen the film where he gets the sticky notes? He's being God for the day and he's got sticky notes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So sometimes it can feel a bit like that. But again, it's just dealing with what you have to do, clearing it, and then getting set to the next day, innit?
So what would you do if all your sticky notes were boxed off and you only had a few left?
Don't know. Who knows?
Get a new box of sticky notes.
Yeah, yeah. But you know, it's amazing, you know, and just again, just watching this next generation coming through now, what they're achieving, is very, very proud. And a third generation, you know, I've got grandkids now, and just being able to share the stories with him. Just magical.
No, and it's nice to see you're able to hand over the Try for Life flag to so many people that are now, you surely can't turn up to every event.
There's a lot going on, you know. There's you know, if you think away from the events, all the training stuff, all the seminars, all the stuff that people are doing as a result of you know, what Try for Life is and was.
So tell us about the Forshaw Group.
So I left school in 1984, 16, with very few, well, no qualifications. Yeah, I think my school spent more time on the sports fields and boxing gyms and swimming pools than the academic side of what should have been important. So I ended up on a youth training scheme through the Construction Industry Training Board. I did the year as a carpenter joiner. Then I got off an apprenticeship by a company called Balfour Beatty. So I did a 3-year apprenticeship, got me sitting guilds, advanced sitting guilds. Then I got an opportunity to do a BTEC in construction, which I did. And then a HNC in construction management. Then I was offered the chance to go to Malaysia for 4 months on a company sponsored place with Rally International, which I did when I was about 22, 23. And then when I came back from there, that experience changed my life because I met young graduates, people on the year out from university. And I've been on building sites since I was 16. I'm meeting these guys who are educated, you know, doing degrees. I thought, you know what? If these people can do a degree, I'm going to do a degree. So I came back and said to the company, I want to move into management. So I came off the tools, went into on a management plan. So I went through as a junior foreman, trade foreman, general foreman, to site manager. I then decided I was going to go to university. So I packed it all in to do a 4-year full-time degree. In order to do that, I had to go back on the tools to pay me bills.
So you were doing weekend work?
Weekend and in between the university days. So your lectures might be 2 or 3 days. So you'd have 2 days a week where you could earn money and study. I'll come back to that in a second. But at the time, I was doing a lot of skiing. Through the Marines, I'd learned to ski in Norway, come back, met Deb. We wanted to do a hobby together, and there's a ski slope in Bebington. So we started at Merseyside Ski Club, which I remained a member of for 20, 30 years. It was while I was at that club that I met Richard Forshaw. We became good mates. He was a painter. I was a joiner. I was starting university, needed to earn money. So why don't we do some work together? So he was a sole trader painter. I was a joiner, self-employed. And that's how the Forshaw Group started. So that's the start of a 30-year journey. So we went from a sole trader to a partnership, not with me, with his wife. Then we went to a limited company, and we built it up to probably £3 or 4 million turnover by 2013. And he decided he was going to leave the business. So we went through a management buyout. So I borrowed a load of money to buy a business that I'd spent the last 10 years building, and then spent the last, almost 15 years now creating what is the Forshaw Group. And that's been amazing journey, amazing challenges to where we are now. I'm moving into the next phase of my life. So along that way, you know, all this kind of ESG, environmental, social, governance, that the whole world, certainly since COVID, has kind of embraced around diversity, mental health and well-being, training and development, and AI automation. So all those elements are integral to what we do in the business, alongside the fire and flood restoration, which is what we deliver every day. Heavily invested in apprenticeships. So we've got a lot of local partnership dealing with underprivileged kids. And if you look at my roots into the industry, is where the passion comes from. So I'm really invested in engaging that local community in Knowsley. We started a partnership with the schools. So we're going in, speaking to these children when they're 13, 14 years old, talking about our industry, talking about the opportunities, bringing them into the business, showing them what we do. Then as they come through their exam periods, making sure they get those minimum grades for maths and English. And then we get them onto apprenticeship schemes. A lot of these youngsters coming from underprivileged backgrounds, a lot of them bordering criminality. And if you look at the social impact around Knowsley and Kirby, it's nationally it's a really deprived area. So by getting these youngsters into the workplace, earning money, becoming self-disciplined, and resilient, it's going to take me away from all those other distractions. So I've spent 7 years doing that with this particular partnership, and the rewards from that have been amazing, seeing the way these youngsters come through and develop. Within there, we've got an SLT, senior leadership team, which are now taking over more of the responsibility of the business. So I'm not having to be at the coalface as much on that day-to-day stuff. So very much a coaching, mentoring role, and bringing in lots of external influence as well, because it's not just my voice. They're getting lots of input. So the plan now is the next 5 years is to look at that transition to secure the future of the Foreshore Group with the people who have been involved and have built it for the last 10, 15 years. And then for me to kind of step away and do more of the stuff that we love.
So you're planning to free a little bit more time up for the Try for Life?
For the other stuff, yeah. Although it's all in there.
It's a combination now, really.
A real challenging time to be a business owner was just coming through COVID and the unpredictable outcomes of it. All them things I spoke about with the ESG agenda, having to be more mindful about people's working conditions, work from home, more flexible working, more around diversity and inclusion. It just brought new challenges to the business. So maybe we had to redefine what we did. So straight after COVID, I introduced a project called Reimagine, and looked at every part of the business and just looked at how we could make it more sustainable, more beneficial to people being part of that business. And I think the social side of it has been really important. The mental health side, all these interventions that we can bring in to support people in their role to become that new normal.
Many of the people that work with you also do daily regular activities with Try for Life.
So this apprenticeship program, what I wanted to do with these young people was not just offer them a construction skill. I wanted to build life skills. Because a lot of these young people come in, they've got a real low confidence. They've got real lack of life experience. You know, some examples. So the kids will come in, and the first time we go to Wales is the first time they've been on a mountain. First time we go coasting to Anglesey is the first time they've been in the sea. Yeah, and I find that really incredible. But to see the difference it makes to these youngsters experiencing that for a day, something that they've never ever done or tried before, to see that come back into the business and to see the impact that has. I think that youthful energy that comes into the business as well is reflected in the more mature guys, the older guys who are, in effect, their mentors, because they're teaching them the trade skills. So it is just like a big family. You know, we look after each other. And, you know, these youngsters come with a whole baggage of issues that ordinarily you wouldn't entertain. But because you've got a passion for that and you want to help. But again, it's a 50-50. You know, I'm quite straight talking with these young guys. And I don't think it's something they're used to in school anymore. You know, I think that resilience in school is non-existent. I think it's something we have to just kind of redefine in people. And I make them responsible for their decisions, for their actions, and the wanting to do stuff. So as part of this apprenticeship program, I offer a call them enhancement days. So they get to go on these adventure days, these challenge days. We do days of charity, we do days of community work, and we do industry visits. So they'll go off and visit various parts of our industry to give them the bigger picture. So although they might come in as a plasterer or a joiner or a plumber working in a little company in a domestic environment, I can say, this is the world that you've got access to. This is the pathway that we can create for you, which starts with an MBQ. But if you pass that, you do your level 3, your level 4, your level 5, your level 6, you can go to university, you can become an engineer, become a surveyor, you can do whatever you want, you decide, but there's the pathway.
Do many of them say to you, Liam, I don't want to go to school, can I just come and work for you?
Well, yeah, a lot of the kids get in, so the headmaster will phone me. So I've got 3 or 4 youngsters here who are borderline criminality, drugs, no interest in school, can you do something with them? And I bring them in, have an honest conversation. So this isn't school, this is the workplace. I have 3 rules. You're in every day, you're in on time, and you're polite. No mobile phone, no texting and messaging all day. They do that for 3 months. I bring them in and we give them an apprenticeship opportunity because they prove to me that they've got the discipline and the way to do it. You know, other guys come in and they've got 100 excuses why they can't be there on time, why they can't be there every day. And I'll find solutions. You know,
Do you stick to the three rules?
No, absolutely, yeah. And when I started, I was really flexible on it. So I'd have 15 kids come in and I'd find 15 jobs for them. They'd all have a job. But then there's guys there who didn't want the job or they weren't capable of the job. And it just reflected badly on the guys that really wanted it.
Mm.
So after about 3 or 4 years, I switched the model to a zero tolerance. So I do the interview with these guys and say, right, here's all the questions. Last question, what do you understand by zero tolerance? Every one of those kids knew what zero tolerance was. I said, that's what we operate here. So there's no second chances. There's no excuses. So if you get it wrong, you're gone because it's your choice, your decision. So I'll meet you halfway and I'll always meet you halfway, whether it's financial, whether it's my time or whatever. So I will be there 100%, but I'm not doing it all. You've got to meet me halfway. So I had an incident with a kid come in. He had a few issues at home. He was caring for his grandmother as a carer. And in Knowsley where we are, the bus routes are really crap. Yeah, the buses are never on time. Sometimes you don't turn up. This kid's late. He's travelling from Old Swan. So he comes to see me. He said, look, I'm struggling. He said, can I go on the bike to work scheme to get a bike to come to work? I said, well, I don't really want to mess around with all the red tape and the government stuff because it's more paperwork to do than it's worth you having the bike. So I know a little charity, so why don't I just get you a bike and you can ride it to work? So he said, great. This lad's a big lad. Must be 14, 15 stone. So I phoned the lad at the charity with the bikes. Said, I'm sending Declan up. Sort him out with a bike. So he goes up there. I said to him, how much is the bike? He said, I'll do it for 250 quid. So right, so I'll send him up. Sort him a bike. I'll sort the 250 quid. So Declan goes to the warehouse. The guy phones me. He said, I've got Declan here. He said, he's picked the bike. He said, it's 1,500 quid. I said, 1,500 quid? He said, you told me £250. He said, oh, he's picked an electric bike. So I put Declan on the phone. I said, Declan, what are you playing at? He said, oh, I said, this bike's amazing. He said, it's such a long way to ride. I said, Declan, I said, you live in Old Swan. So how long do you think an electric bike is going to last outside your house before someone pinches it? I said, and you'll be still left paying for it. I said, put the lad on. I said, look, just give him something decent, but he's not having an electric bike. Anyway, I went for one of these kinetic bikes, you know, where you pedal and it powers. So I gone into his line manager. I said, I'm getting Declan this bike tomorrow. And he said, well, just hold fire because we're sacking him tomorrow. I said, why are you sacking him? Because he's always late. I said, well, do you know why he's late? No. I said, because the buses and this and that. So let me get on the bike tomorrow. Let's give him a period, see how he gets on. You got that kinesthetic bike. He's never been late for work. Yeah. So little things. And do that with all the kids. They've got a problem. Let's fix it. But you've got to take responsibility.
There's so many Declans out there.
Oh, everyone, yeah.
But at least Declan was willing to meet you halfway.
And that's all I want.
And everybody loves a Declan.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're able to figure out your way.
Yeah, yeah. And I've had loads of examples of that, you know, these kids where the little issues that you can just steer them and get them over that hurdle. But more importantly, you know, I was on the Knowsley Better Together board where they talk about all these social issues with youngsters. And I say, well, you know, what I do with them schools works. So I go in and talk to the youngsters, bring them in, give them a sense of purpose, give them money to feel valued, builds confidence. So there's kids there now come through from 16, 17, borderline criminality, drugs, poor family home. Yeah, those lads are in their mid-20s now, driving vans, doing really great in trades, earning a fortune. And they won't be on that statistic of criminality. They won't be on that statistic of needing all these social supports because they're not broken people. Yeah. We've had that intervention early in their life to enable them to make them changes. And I think that's a massive part of my agenda with young people.
So you've created your platform on how you operate your business and how you can bring that in to help the community.
That's right. It's all social value in it. And it's only small, you know, when I speak to people, you know, probably had 150 kids through, which, you know, in the great scheme of things is not massive. But I'm fed up with going to conferences and listening to companies that tell me, oh yeah, we've delivered 3,000 apprenticeships. Yeah. Well, 40% of those 3,000 apprenticeships fail before they even leave college. Another 40% don't even end up in the role they just qualified in. Yeah. And they always turn up with a bit of paper telling me they're a joiner or a plasterer, and they've never done a day on site. So how can that be beneficial to an industry that's screaming out for skill shortage?
How do you see the future of construction industry?
Unless it changes, I mean, it's starting to change slowly. No, they are starting to listen, but it needs to be. But all industries, you know, look at any manufacturing, look at hospitality, look at construction, they're all miles and miles behind the skills that they need for a sustainable future. Look at the techie world, you look at retail, is a different story. There's a lot of young people are drawn in by the bright lights of fashion and technology.
From my perspective, it's so hard to get a good tradesperson now.
Yep.
Most of the tradespeople, I think the average age, I might get this stat slightly wrong, but I'm pretty accurate, 75% of people that are in construction are over 50.
Yeah, absolutely.
So for me, the supply and demand, if I had kids or to advise someone that's interested in the construction industry, it must be wide open for them to, if you're good, you're going to clean up.
That's what I see these kids doing. And, you know, a lot of them train with us and they leave. They want to be self-employed or they'll go and want to work. Mm. As we all do, you know, you want to advance yourself. And it used to really upset me that these people want to leave this amazing business. But that's what we do. You know, we take the learning and we want to get off and make our own way. And sometimes they come back, or they come back as something different. You know, they'll be self-employed or whatever. But I think that whole thing around the skills is massive. Mm. And something that we all industries need to be mindful of.
Well, none of us would have achieved anything if we didn't have people to help us along the way. Exactly. And it's as I sort of reach my middle age, if that's what you would start to say, I've realised that my support network was incredible when I grew up.
Yeah, yeah.
Although I didn't know it, for me to look back, I was purely blessed.
Yeah, yeah. With
the people, and I only feel that it's right that I give some of my time back.
Yeah.
Because if you didn't, it just wouldn't be right to be alive now and not share your experiences.
And
through that, I noticed that the dividends are paying back to me again.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the more time I spend with people, even if 5 or 10% of those people end up working with you, working for you, or whatever shape it is, them people add so much value to you in your life. And it's probably the mushroom of Try for Life, the mushroom of your business.
Yeah, yeah.
And my message is that you should always spend a pretty large part of your time helping, mentoring, giving back, or spending time with people that can help and mentor you.
That's how it works, isn't it? Mm. You know, and it's so you just feel immensely privileged and fortunate to have lived the life I've lived. And you know, you'd ask, well, why doesn't everybody do that? And a lot of it's just about those habits. A lot of it's about the choices and the decision to do stuff. I love it when people say, you can't do that, because I always do.
who's ever achieved anything that everybody's agreed that they could do it?
Yeah, yeah.
Anything that you think, wow, or can't believe that's been done is because everybody else along the way thought it couldn't be done.
Yeah, yeah.
If everyone thinks it's going to be done, well, then everyone's going to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
I know you're extremely modest and appreciate life for what it's given you. But from everyone, my team, try for life. And I'm sure anyone listening to this today must be extremely delighted and honored to have you as a friend, mentor, boss,
and likewise,
grandfather, father, and many other ways that they could call you. Just thanks, Liam. Thanks for everything.
Thank you.
Thank you for the conversation today.
Yeah.